So before I became a nurse like 4-ish years ago, I had a career, maybe about 15 or 20 years of editing TV commercials, also doing some acting and voiceover. I wasn't like a top level editor by any means. I mean, I always stayed busy, but I was pretty, mid-level. I did work with a lot of pros, though. So let's talk about some advertising, some people I have met along the way, and a couple of departed friends.
You are my density. You are my density.
So yeah, advertising does get a bad rap, sometimes justifiably so. The late comedian Bill Hicks had a funny thing. He was like, "By the way, if anyone here is in advertising or marketing, kill yourself. You are Satan's spawn. Quit putting a goddamn dollar sign on every fucking thing on this planet." Which, you know, I kind of get it. I mean, advertising can be evil. I mean, we all got to make a living one way or the other. But, yeah, I mean, it can kind of make us want shit we don't need and, you know, see advertisements and like, "Oh, my life sucks. I need that. That thing would make my life more satisfying." So, you know, there's definitely a scumminess to it. I mainly worked on like toy commercials, usually, you know, cheap little toys or games and stuff. And I figure if kids got some joy out of playing the fucking toys or playing with the toys or watching the commercials and whatever. That was my rationalization. But yeah, I never really got into like the arty aspects of commercials. I mean, it's hard for me to be inauthentic. I mean, I can bullshit with the best of them, like fucking around. But if, you know, a director's like, "Oh, isn't that shot of the chair beautiful?" I'd be like, "Yeah, no, it looks good." And I'm not going to like blow smoke off someone's ass, make them think they're some kind of artist. And yeah, a lot of the bigger editors would get into like the artistic bullshit side of commercials. I just always had a more of a working man outlook on editing. It's like we were selling toys to kids. We're not curing cancer or making some fucking meaningful work of art. But anyway, that said, I did have, you know, a blast editing commercials. It was a totally fun business to work in the late 90s, to 2000s. Yeah, it was kind of the heyday. Totally, you know, went kind of shifted from film to video throughout that time, and also shifted from editing being this kind of very boutique-y thing to Final Cut or whatever, where you could do it at your home. So it kind of lost its luster along the way, and I figured that out, thank God. But anyway, yeah, the kids' commercials, I was pretty good at it. I mean, I had kind of that was kind of my gravy train, working on a lot of Mattel stuff. And a complete bonus is I would always put my voice on the rough cut when I'm cutting it. You know, whatever the voiceover was. "You've got to round the circle of death before you can enter Magic's Blast-Off." And sometimes it, you know, sounded pretty damn good. So the agency, you know, I got to be friends with them. And when they would go show the cuts to Mattel or whatever, you know, they would just play it. And if Mattel was like, "Yep, looks good." And if they had no comments, like, you know, "Change that fucking voice." If they didn't say anything, then they would keep my voice. I would go to the sound studio to record it. And it was totally awesome. And I didn't have like a voiceover agent. I had like an on-camera agent at the time going on auditions. But I didn't have a voiceover agent, so, you know, I would do 3 or 4 commercials here and there, and then the residual checks would get mailed directly to me. And I wasn't making a lot of money at this time, so it was like, fuck, it was like, oh my God, you know, 10 grand or something in the fucking mailbox for saying a few words. It's a total racket, but hey, what are you going to do? But yeah, anyway, as far as editing, I totally started at the bottom, literally the bottom in the vault. I was like a runner who would just drop off and pick up shit, and then became vault. And then I think I was like the vault manager for a bit, and then an assistant editor, and finally became editor. So it took me, you know, several years to move up the ladder, which, you know, kind of taught me the business, and kind of I grew up during the process, to be honest. And yeah, I kind of, when I became assistant editor, I was editor to this fairly big deal editor. He cut like a lot of David Fincher stuff and whatnot. He's an okay guy, kind of a turkey overall, but you know, whatever. And I would do revisions on his stuff. He was like really good, very technical, just, you know, really good editor. And so eventually, like, you know, they were like, "Hey, we got to do revisions for this," and the main editor's on a, you know, working on a movie. So, hey, we got Mark to help you out. And I remember at one point there was, it was kind of a dickish producer and somebody for the agency. I can't remember the spot. And I had to do revisions on it. And I didn't know what, I mean, I was looking at the Avid and the timeline. And I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck this effect is. It was some, later on I learned it was like a collapse effect. So it could take several tracks and collapse them all down to one. And you have to like go into that track to see them all. So they'd be like, can you take some frames off this and add it to this? And so, yeah, I would do that. And then it would fuck up all the interwining effects. So I never really even understood it. And I think they finally were like, okay, yeah, we'll just wait till the main editor's here. And speaking of dealing with like bullshit agency people, it's a funny thing I used to do. Like if, you know, we tried a bunch of cuts and it seems to work, then some pain in the ass, generally someone that doesn't know what they're talking about will be like, oh, can you take a frame off of that one and add a frame to that? And so what I would do is I would click, add frame, remove frame. Add frame, remove frame. I wouldn't do anything. I would just basically click it a few times and it would go back to exactly what I showed them before. And 9 out of 10 times they'd say, yeah, that looks better. Or they would just say, I can't really tell the difference. I would respect those people because it's like, yeah, there isn't a difference, you dumb shit. But yeah, I started taking over editing actually on some of the spots as I kind of got better at it. And I cut a lot of Taco Bell spots. That was my kind of main thing for my early editing career. A lot of like, you know, Taco Bell dog commercials, Yo Quiero Taco Bell. I think the dog was actually named Gidget. He finally ended up dying. But it was a totally fun time. The two guys, Chuck and Clay, were creative directors, and they also later became directors. I cut some stuff for them later, and I was actually in one of their commercials as an actor. I was closer to Chuck, but they were both cool. And the great thing about these guys was they knew what they were doing. They knew what they wanted. They were like pro. They didn't need to see a million fucking versions. They knew what worked. And, you know, if I ever had to cut with them, I'm like, okay, this is going to be a short day and it's, you know, with no bullshit around. And most people, especially like younger creatives, I hate that. I use that word loosely as hell, creatives. That's stupid. But anyway, or like people who just didn't have an opinion or had no chops. It's like they wouldn't know like what they wanted. They wouldn't know what they liked. And these kind of people would have you try a million variations on something and they still wouldn't know it worked. Those are the ones where you'd be up editing 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock at night. A lot of editors got stuck with people like that. A lot of, you know, more the high end ones where it's all arty and they're like, oh, let's try a million versions. I was, you know, the fucking kind of easier cuts, comedy stuff, short things, toys and stuff like that. So I would be done always at 5 o'clock. Rarely would I have to work late. And same thing with like young directors, the directors that knew their shit, they didn't shoot a lot of extra stuff. I mean, something if they had, you know, extra time or fuck it. And it was usually very storyboarded, easy to cut together, you know, just fucking fit. They knew what they wanted. Young directors would shoot like endless amounts of video. By this time, it had transitioned from film to video. And, you know, they would just shoot everything because they didn't know anything. So, you know, every fucking possible angle, and hey, we'll just, you know, try everything in post. It's like, oh God. But anyway, when you got to work with like real pros, which I did occasionally, like Chuck and Clay, it was just so refreshing and like easy and fun. Chuck actually quit the business and moved to Hawaii. I kept in touch with him, but tragically he came down with a really bad type of cancer and he died several years ago. He was a great guy who was always cool as hell to me, even when I was a completely nothing vault guy. You can totally see a person's character on how they kind of, you know, treat not the lesser people, like, you know, the guy in the vault or the bus boy or something. It's like people that can't do anything for them. But these people of some power or whatever, it's like they're normal with this person. It's not like they're holier than thou or some bullshit. That's when you know a person is like, okay, that person is solid. And when someone treats someone below them like shit, immediately they're out of my book. It's like, forget it. That's fucking venial sin. It's like certain things you don't do. If you do it, you suck. Bottom line. And I mean, I've known some janitors and homeless people that are more worthy of respect than some asshole director. And around this time for Taco Bell and stuff, I was editing a lot of commercials with the director Rocky Morton. He actually got my voiceover in one of the commercials. It was for like a Taco Bell lottery spot, and the dog was like, I don't know, cutting into a transmission of the lottery numbers being shown on the TV. I was the TV announcer guy. I was like, and the winning lottery numbers are 7, 11, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, Rocky Morton, he famously directed the 1993 kind of fiasco Super Mario Brothers with his wife, Annabelle Jankel. Man, it was a mess. You know, it's some people like it. I mean, it's kind of got a little cult following a little bit. But yeah, he also directed Max Headroom with my man, Matt Frewer, who I always love and especially love in The Taking of Beverly Hills. I think I mentioned that before. Please try and watch it somewhere. And I actually dig the underappreciated 1988 remake of DOA, Dead on Arrival. And it's directed by Rocky Morton and Annabelle Jankel. But yeah, it's a classic noir where the lead character is poisoned. The redo is with Dennis Quaid, who I think was dating Meg Ryan at the time. And yeah, she's also in this. And also Dennis Quaid, I think at the time, was like doing mountains of coke. Somehow he got through that. I don't know, his performances never seemed to suffer during the period where he was just like hoovering the shit. So kudos to him. And then also the funny Daniel Stern was in DOA, the remake. He was famously in City Slickers, which also had Jack Palance, the scary as fuck, intimidating Jack Palance. There, speaking of Jack Palance in advertising, there's a great little clip out there. It's of Jack Palance doing a recording session, you know, for probably some inane product. And he just blows up at the person giving him directions, the woman giving him directions. I think they're like, you know, they keep having him doing it over and over again. And he's like, you know, I didn't sign up for this and I think I know what I'm doing. And so anyway, he just blows up at one point and it's classic. He's like, I don't even know who the fuck you are. And after 50 fucking years in this business, I'm not going to take all the interpretations from you. Let's do this thing and know that we are getting close to burnout. The lady, I'm sure, was just shitting in her pants. But yeah, the original DOA is from 1950. It's a great classic noir directed by Rudolph Maté, starring Edmund O'Brien or Pamela Britton. The great opening classic scene is in the original is Edmund O'Brien is walking to a police station. And he goes up to the whatever the head guy and he's like, you know, I want to report a murder. The policeman says, all right, sit down. Where was the murder committed? And Edmund O'Brien goes, San Francisco, last night. And then the cop asked, who was murdered? And Edmund O'Brien says, I was. He gets poisoned and he has to like a certain amount of time before he can like try and find his killer before he dies. But he knows he's going to die. So very cool little twist. But yeah, working in advertising was kind of cushy. It's like all of our lunches we'd be paid for and we could go like, you know, out to do like agency dinners at the fucking best restaurants in Los Angeles and just spend it up. My buddy Charlie, he was like my assistant editor at the time. He's actually a sound mixer now, pretty pro sound mixer. He helps out mixing some of these episodes. But anyway, we went to Michigan to take over on a Chrysler job. I was going to take over editing and he was my assistant. And most of the work had already been done. It had been like a fucking train wreck of like a long hours. So by the time I'm there to do revisions, there wasn't a ton to do. It was like very fucking easy and we had easy days. And so, you know, we had the company credit card and we would just go to, me and Charlie would go to the most crazy indulgent like steak dinners and stuff. And just, I just remember, I think Capitol Grill once, we were just like, we were like leaving and they were like, oh, frick it, let's get another glass of whiskey. And so, yeah, it was just fucking Louis the 14th or whatever, totally indulgent. I think I bought some sunglasses once on the job. I'm like, yo, this is a, you know, this is because I'm working on the commercial. I need these sunglasses. Sometimes I remember albums with certain locations or dates or something. And there's a few albums that are very specific. And so anyway, I bought this album in Michigan, me and Charlie, the Metric album, Live It Out, which had, you know, some pretty cool songs on The Police and the Private. I think that's the name of it. But yeah, I've always loved the song Combat Baby. From their first album in 2003, it's called Old World Underground, Where Are You Now? Totally cool song. Yeah, here's a little bit of Combat Baby. I try to be so nice, compromise, who gets it good? Every mighty mile, 70s child. Every mighty mile, 70s child. Beats me, combat baby, come back baby. And yeah, speaking of like super random things, I was actually on an episode of The Apprentice. Like I came into work one day and they're like, hey, you're going to be on The Apprentice. They had picked like two editors to work on it. And basically we just did it at my work. And anyway, I never watched the show really, but I guess they would be, the teams would be, you know, given assignments like do this, open a store, blah, blah, blah. And so one of them was like, okay, you've got to, you know, shoot, edit, do everything to create a commercial within 24 hours. So these two teams, the two finalists, you know, they wrote a script for like Febreze or something. Each of them did their own thing. They went and shot it, and then they came to us. I was editing with one of the teams. The other editor was editing with the other. It was kind of, my team was kind of boring. And like I was in the show a couple times, and the only time every time they cut to me, I was like fucking eating. I was like just putting shit in my mouth. At the time, I was eating all these goddamn nutrition bars and shit. Yeah, it was kind of a fun experience. We didn't even get paid for it, but it was cool. And I know Zack Snyder is like a huge deal these days. And I once caught a spot with him. Oh, God, back in the day, it was like a champion basketball spot. I think it was for Italy. Pretty low budget. They didn't have a ton. That's why I was cutting it, probably. I remember it was on a weekend even. And so, yeah, he came up and whatever. Cool guy. And we were working on it and trying things. And he went out, I think, to like walk his dog. And he came back in and we're standing there. He was kind of standing behind me and I was editing. And then we're kind of both looking at each other like weirdly for a few minutes. And then, you know, I think he or I finally was like, did you shit your pants or what's going on? You know, so we looked down at our shoes and his shoe like literally had like the most dog shit ever possible on a shoe. It's like it almost was like perfect. It was like every fucking spot was covered. And so he was like, oh, Jesus. He went downstairs and like cleaned his shoe. But anyway, that's what I'll always remember. And the spot turned out pretty good. And he seemed cool. Another director who's kind of a total weirdo, Tony Kaye, famously did American History X, which I was never a fan of. And then he also, like, before Marlon Brando died, they were, like, getting together and doing these weird things. And fucking Tony Kaye was, like, you know, dressed up as Osama bin Laden. Just some weird fucking videos when Marlon Brando was, like, totally out of it. But anyway, he shot a commercial with that I assisted on. And for some reason, he just kind of, like, shot a whole, like, freezer full of beef hanging there. And it made no sense in the concept of the commercial, but he was just like, he just shot it just to shoot it. And everyone was like, okay, you can do that. You know, it's like, what the fuck? Why wouldn't someone just be like, that's too stupid? You know, but directors are gods in some ways. And a much better experience is I got to cut some environmental commercial with the actress Amy Smart. Oh God, the hot as hell Amy Smart. I just loved her when growing up and stuff. Oh my God, just a dream. She was in Just Friends from 2005, which is pretty funny, with Ryan Reynolds. And weirdly enough, I didn't do a lot of music videos, but I did cut a video for the Ryan Reynolds movie Van Wilder. It was like Bouncing Off the Walls or something by the band Sugar Cult. It turned out okay. My buddy directed it. But yeah, anyway, Amy Smart was so damn pretty. She was nice and cute. She was going out with some kind of goofball actor. I think his name is Brandon Williams. You probably recognize him if you know movies from the 80s and 90s. He was okay. He was just whatever. And he's actually become like a huge real estate agent in Los Angeles. So anyway, but while we're on the subject of music, I did work with a couple cool musicians. I was friends with his like LA band Further. It was like they were just like a fucking local, you know, they played all the time at all the places, the Jabberjaw and, you know, Spaceland, Silver Lake Lounge, The Smell. But anyway, I kind of became friends with them, and one of their friends hooked me up with Lou Barlow of Dinosaur Jr. and Sebado and Centrado and fucking Folk Implosion fame, you know, total legendary indie rock figure. And I cut a video with him for this song Flame from 1999, which is kind of a cool song, actually. It's got a great fucking chorus, and it's totally, I could see it being a popular song, man. But yeah, it was just me and Lou Barlow, you know, sitting there for a day or two, cutting it together. Seemed like a nice guy. We had fun cutting it, and yeah, it was kind of a thrill. But anyway, there's a little, I'll do the chorus from Flame. It's pretty good. I don't want to be the one who rides flame. I don't want to be the one who rides flame. I don't want to be the one who rides flame. I don't want to be the one who rides flame. And then really interestingly, I got hooked up through the same people, I think, with the kind of infamous band Royal Trucks, with the interesting as hell ex-addict Neil Haggerty and his girlfriend, and then became ex-girlfriend, also addict for a while there, Jennifer Harima. Man, they were an intense group. I mean, they were totally fun. They were totally nice people, but just imposing, kind of like, whoa, these guys are something. But yeah, you know, Neil Haggerty's an amazing guitarist. He's been in some other bands too. And yeah, I cut together this documentary, Royal Trucks Live at Gettysburg. It was released on Drag City as a video. It's like a 20-minute video or something. And then I also cut the TV commercial. Yes, they did a TV commercial, I think for like local Chicago markets or somewhere, for their album Accelerator. But yeah, they were totally cool characters, kind of intellectual, kind of, you know, lowbrow, highbrow, fucking gutter. I mean, it was like they were just all-encompassing and just one of a kind and totally nice, like I said. I remember afterwards I got like Christmas cards from Royal Trucks for a few years there, which is the epitome of cool to me. I was like, oh, my God, it's a handwritten, handmade card, you know, from their P.O. box, I think in Virginia at the time. But anyway, I hope Jennifer is doing well. I know Neil, he's recently ran into some trouble. I don't know, some officers were there to check on him, and he, I guess he attacked them. You know, he struggled with mental illness here and there, I think, and drugs and stuff. So I hope he gets through it okay. I mean, you could tell he had kind of a little bit of a trouble vibe even when I met him. But, you know, like I said, he was a nice guy to me and seemed nice to others. So. And anyway, Royal Trucks is, you know, kind of an acquired taste, but I try and check them out. There's actually a great song that I love, Call Out the Lions. It's from 2000's Pound for Pound. Here's a little bit of that chorus. I know you love your daddy. I know you love your mom. Well, my friends, the time has come to cease and desist, and I'm long gone. And just briefly, I just wanted to mention one kind of advertising-based movie that I just watched the other night. It's a Videodrome from 1983, directed by the great David Cronenberg with James Woods and Deborah Harry. It's about this fucked-up TV show about torture, and then it's kind of like the boundary between reality and fantasy, and it's got some amazing scenes, or like, you know, James Woods puts a videotape in his fucking, like, vaginal opening on his stomach. Totally weird. Long live the new flesh. It's short and funny and entertaining. And it's just weirdly relevant today. There's like kind of a VR headset one guy puts on at one point, and just with all the like extreme, you know, porn and shit and like artificial reality. I don't know. It seemed like completely relevant. So as we approach the final reel here, I wanted to go back to the edit facility where I started. It was on Sunset and Cherokee in Hollywood. I was, you know, the runner, the lowest, nobody, just got out of film school. And there was this editor who edited next to us on the bottom floor there. His name was Eric Z. But yeah, super skilled, technically, artistically, but more important than that, he was just a cool guy, like a nice fucking dude. And he was doing all of Spike Jonze's stuff. They started together. So, I mean, he cut like Sabotage by Beastie Boys. I remember, you know, going in and watching rough cuts of it, of fucking Sabotage, man. And then they also did like Weezer's Buddy Holly, which is a fun one. Just tons of fucking iconic videos and commercials. Kind of weirdly enough, one of my friends from the advertising industry actually was Adam Horowitz's girlfriend. Back in the day in New York, Adam Horowitz is one of the three dudes from the Beastie Boys. But yeah, anyway, that was kind of awesome. She's in the video for Fight for Your Right to Party, which is pretty classic. And yeah, Spike Jonze actually was totally cool to me always as well. I think he came for money or something, but he was talented regardless. And yeah, anyway, Eric cut, you know, tons of shit. And he also cut Spike Jonze's movies, including, you know, Being John Malkovich and Adaptation, just classics. I don't love those movies, but I mean, they're just fucking iconic. I remember I went to an early screening ticket I got for like a rough cut of Adaptation, and there were supposed to be like no advertising or industry people at the screening. And I went to take a piss, and Eric Z was coming out of the bathroom, and he was like, hey, what are you doing here? Like, kind of surprised, but he didn't give a shit. I mean, it wasn't like a big deal. What am I going to do? And anyway, somewhere along the way there, I guess he got sick and, you know, got some pretty horrid form of cancer just that lasted several years. And he cut all of Spike Jonze stuff like up till the end. And I'm sure when I was talking with him at times, you know, he was probably dealing with this cancer shit, and he never let on to that to me. I mean, we weren't that close that he was going to divulge, but, you know, he just, you know, probably was going through some rough shit and still being cool as fuck to me. But yeah, he loved music and movies. And like, I think he was in a band, I want to say Fiber Heavy Brain, this band in LA. Yeah, we just were like two guys and interested in things and talking, and there wasn't any bullshit like, oh, you're a runner, I'm this, oh, I'm working with this guy, and you're, you know, it just was, didn't matter, which is, again, is like the key to a person's fucking character. And he was, you know, a big shot, but he didn't act like one, which is, you know, the best. You know, he's just a normal, fucking great, cool-ass guy. Yeah. I remember one of our last conversations was in this parking lot. We were talking about bands and stuff. I think he made a joke or he said something about Superchunk, who I love. I'll mention them at some point. But we were talking a lot about the band Polvo, this pretty arty, melodic, but also noisy rock band originally from North Carolina. They have several albums, but Eric and I were talking about Exploded Drawing from 1996 and the final song, When Will You Die for the Last Time in My Dreams. It's just like, you know, epic long ass song, but the first 2 minutes are just like, they blow me away. And it's funny, I still listen to the song, and every time I listen to it, I, you know, think of Eric, which is, you know, kind of nice. But yeah, anyway, he is missed, and he's another guy whose phone number I still have in my phone. I just, like I said, I never delete those people that are gone. It's like he's no longer here, but he's still my friend. So, Eric, rest in peace. And anyway, I've always loved the band Electric Light Orchestra, ELO, Jeff Lynne. And the ending of the song Mr. Blue Sky was actually used in the trailer for Adaptation, the movie that my buddy Eric C. cut. And yeah. Hey there, Mr. Blue, we're so pleased to be with you. Look around, see what you do. Everybody smiles at you. Ba 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 ba